equal pay for equal work. That's the kind of principle of justice that I think at least modern employment and labor laws tend to have as a kind of a cornerstone of employment law. And I think most people are willing to defend that principle, especially if they're on the short end of the stick. The social teaching of the Catholic Church talks about something different, that we have to give people just wages. But at first, given particularly how, you know, we tend to think about these things in our American society, it appears a little strange that our Lord tells the parable about the landowner who has three workers, each of whom works a very different number of hours in a day, who all get paid the same amount at the end of the day because, well, we agreed to it. Now, of course, the parable is not telling business owners that they can defraud their workers of just wages. Remember that in the parables, people and events stand for other things. The stories are ways of communicating a moral teaching in narrative form, because that's how we understand things best. The landowner in the parable is God, and we are the workers. If there is a contract between us and God of any kind, it's a covenant that if we remain faithful to the end, we will be crowned with righteousness at the end of time. Now, of course, God is not only the landowner, our overseer, as it were, he also created us. And he didn't choose to create us all the same, did he? I guess in one sense, we are really a bunch of little snowflakes, each one different and each one unique. But for all of that, we're all called to exactly the same thing: holiness. But the way in which we live out that call and the capacity we have to receive that call, that's all different. The sheer diversity of creation and of human creation in particular calls forth the majesty of God, who, being one, is also three. He unites in himself perfectly unity and distinction. And so all of the differences in us are a reflection of that wonder. But we don't always like that, do we? Some of us don't even like ourselves at all. We actually despise God's creation and are bold enough to tell him that he should have made us different than he did. Many of us always want to compare, to look at the other person. How much money she has. How much easier his life seems to be. How much better they look. How much stronger he is. How less anxious she acts, and on. And then we get jealous. We seethe with envy. And if our heart is really poisoned, we plot and scheme and take revenge because we want what they have. And then we get angry at God because we don't have it. Now forget that we know that everybody's got their own problems, right? And things are never always exactly what they may seem to be. But so often we make up in our heads that the other person that we're jealous of has this perfect life, when in reality, they're looking at us and saying, gosh, if I could just be that guy, right? This is just human nature. This is how we do. This is part of being fallen in our woundedness after original sin. You know, there really is part of me that hopes that our merciful and loving God looks down from heaven and smiles at our fecklessness in all of this. But it is our rebellion against what God has given us and what God has not given us that can often lead us astray. Now, I'm not saying that we should just be inert and passive receivers of whatever comes our way. I'm not saying even that all ambition is bad. If you're a father, you need to have some get up and go to excel at your job, to increase your financial standing, to help your family and others. You'd be irresponsible to do anything less. But what is important is that we remember that humility, without which the spiritual life cannot exist, is the radical acceptance of what is. We don't obsess over what others have or who they are, because they could just as easily not have those things or be something else. Everything good that we have ultimately comes from God, and we're not the owners of any of it. Not our finances, not our children, not our significant others, not our worldly goods. What we are stewards. We are called to take care of people, places, and things as best as we can, because they're all God's gift. And it's when we forget that we are the servants of the great King, that we are stewards of creation and not its masters, that's when we begin to grumble and to lose our way. The last will be first, and the first will be last. Pope Francis always reminds us that God is a God of surprises, right? Things from God's perspective are rarely what we think they should be. But he has a way of making sure that his plan wins out in the end. Now, you know how I love to tell the stories of scriptural characters and also the saints. Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, I think, is a great reminder of this. A highly strung, sensitive girl born to a pious French family, she walled herself up in a Carmelite convent at the age of 15 and spent much of her time struggling with the fact that she wanted to be a missionary outside the convent walls. Most of the other sisters in her convent didn't think that she was anything remarkable at all. Thérèse herself would tell you that she was too little to do great things. And so she set about doing ordinary things with extraordinary love. She died at the age of 24 of tuberculosis in 1897, a totally unknown girl. Today, she is a doctor of the church, the patroness of missions, and one of the most beloved saints of modern times. Her parents, Louis and Sadie Martin, were canonized by the Holy Father last year. Several of her blood sisters are on their way to canonization as well. It's a reminder that God can do amazing things. He did amazing things with this family who in so many ways was totally ordinary. When you read the mom, Zélie, her letters to family members, you know, it's like reading, you know, just, well, here's what we're doing, and I'm making lace and doing these other things, and it's all kind of wonderful and great, and sometimes things are annoying, and my husband gets on my nerves and all of that. And then these little nuggets of wisdom that just kind of come out of nowhere. It's incredible. But the secret was that with unstudied simplicity, they just were who they were, and they did what they did. I know that those of you who are in church this morning are serious about the spiritual life, because otherwise you could have slept in until the crack of noon and gone and had coffee at Starbucks and read the New York Times instead of going to church this morning. You're serious about what it is that we do, about your salvation, about your spiritual life, about an abundantly human life. But we know so often it's easy to come into church and, you know, we look at the statues of the saints on the walls and we think, there's no way I'm ever going to be holy because I can never do what they did. But that's what's so beautiful about it. As St. Francis de Sales writes of the true secret to holiness, Be yourself and be that well. At the end of the day, if you cooperate with God's grace wherever you may be and whenever God calls you, whether it be at 9 o'clock, at 3, or at 5, you will receive not just silver or gold, but heaven itself.